Welcome, John. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Nice to be here.
What is it about the time frame of the book that first attracted you to writing about it?
Well, I think Moment in the Sun deals with two big kind of shifts in American history and the way Americans thought of themselves. The international one is that we kind of went in a matter of months from thinking of ourselves as the champions of liberty, the people who rooted for the underdog and helped the underdog out, and we're going to go down to Cuba and help the poor Cubans get rid of the yoke of Spanish oppression. And we were doing that, and then a few months later, we went into the Philippines and decided, well, we're not leaving. In fact, you know what? We're imperialists. Yeah, we're as good as Britain and France and Germany and Russia and whoever else was in on it then. And we're white Christians, and these little brown people can't possibly govern themselves. So we're going to stay, and we're going to take the islands, and that's what God wants, because we're Aryans. Now, that was a big shift. And then the other real turning point, and the title of the book deals with it, A Moment in the Sun, is a quote from a quote by W.E.B. Du Bois, an African-American scholar and thinker, who said, after the Civil War, the Negro spent a moment in the sun and then was dragged back into slavery. And what he was talking about there was that after the Yankee troops marched out of the South in the mid-1870s, in all the former Confederate states, the right to vote was taken away from black men. A woman of any race couldn't vote then. And that disenfranchisement ended. The last nail in the coffin of Reconstruction was in North Carolina, in Wilmington. And the book deals with this racial coup that happened in Wilmington, North Carolina.
You know, when I was reading the book, I think, and I'm a history student, I think most Americans don't know, the majority of Americans don't know that there were racial riots in North Carolina at that time. How did you find out about it?
You know, it was just one of those, I think, truly when I was passing through North Carolina once and I heard a mention of it, the history had kind of been buried until the early 70s when there were race riots in a lot of American cities. And there was a kind of citywide meeting of why are we having trouble here? And a couple black people stood up and said, well, you know, because of the legacy. And they said, what legacy? Well, the black bodies floating in the Cape Fear River. And the white people said, what? And then this history started to slowly come back into focus that had been buried for quite a long time, very much like the Philippine-American War.
And some say that the events in the Philippines were kind of a precursor to Vietnam. What's your opinion about that?
Yeah, I think those kind of parallels are unavoidable. It's not why I wrote the book. It's not why I made the movie Amigo, but they're unavoidable. We decided to go into a country that we didn't even know existed in most cases. You know, President McKinley famously said, I don't know if the Philippines is a country or a line of canned goods. And then got down on his knees, and Jesus told him we had to invade and keep the island. So we were dealing with people whose language we didn't speak, whose culture we didn't understand, the fine points of their own political makeup we either ignored or, you know, chose not to know or didn't know, and kind of blundered into this thing that was more difficult than we thought it was. It turned into a very dirty guerrilla war. We declared mission accomplished after 2 years, and then the war dragged on for another 20. It kept moving south, but it never really ended. So there are these parallels. Waterboarding is probably the closest thing, that because that was called the water cure in those days. It's where the U.S. first did it. Picked it up from what the Spanish were doing as they fought against the Philippines, who were trying to get their independence. And it was controversial back then. There were congressional committees. There was, you know, a lot of my information comes from the congressional record and letters home from soldiers and testimony from soldiers who were brought in front of a committee.
So were you actually writing the book while you were filming the movie Amigo?
No, it's a funny kind of, because I do both things, because I write fiction and make films, this evolved. It started as a screenplay about some of the very things that are in the book. We decided finally that nobody was ever going to give us enough money to do a good job of making this movie. And I put it aside for 5 years or so, and then started thinking, you know, I always felt like I was cramming too much information into a two-hour movie. What if I turned it into fiction and it could expand a little? And then on and off over a couple of years, I started working on it and it started expanding. And then I got about a year to work on it without any distractions, because there was a strike of the Writers Guild of America, the Screenwriters Union, and I couldn't be, you know, making a living. And so I got to just work on the book and was able to finish it. Then I went back to the Philippines to do some research to see some places I had described in the book that I'd never actually laid eyes on. And in doing that, traveled around with Joel Torre and, you know, the actor who's has turned out to be the lead in Amico, who knew the island of Luzon very well. And we got talking about the Philippine film industry. And I felt like, you know, for what they spend on a big budget Filipino movie is a very low budget American movie. I could make, if I set it on a village level and make it more of a snapshot than a survey course, which the book is, I could make a pretty good movie here. Set in the same period. None of the characters are the same, but the main situation of the Philippine-American War appears in both.
For a book of this size, and it is a large book, how did you begin? I mean, did you work a year on the outline and developing the characters, or did you plunge right in and begin writing?
You know, the advantage I had with this, you know, and I think it's sometimes it is the advantage of historical fiction, is that I had a timeline for what actually happened. And so, and a fairly finite timeline. There's certainly the finite timeline of the Wilmington racial coup that all happened within about a half a year in 1898. The Spanish the Spanish-American War leading into the Philippine-American War, and the declaration of victory in the Philippine-American War was really only about a three-year period. So I outlined the historical outline, had some ideas for some characters, and then as I started to do my research and start writing, it expanded, and I would add a major character or whatever, as I would say, well, really, we should go here, or, you know, maybe I should start in the Yukon, where people could get incredibly rich in a time when there wasn't really much social mobility, you know, and maybe that dream could die for somebody, and that could send them on another bunch of travels. And so to a certain extent, I started with this, something I didn't do, but history just provided me, and then I started hanging my story on that framework.
So do you have plans for your next novel?
No, I don't. You know, unfortunately, every once in a while I get an idea that I think will float a novel, and they're few and far between. When I do, I just start writing, and sometimes I'm right and sometimes I'm wrong. And, you know, I once wrote 250 pages of a novel after I'd gotten my first novel published, and just one night realized I'm only a third done with this thing. It's about everything. It's not going to work. And that night stayed up. And because I was so bummed out that I was going to just put this thing aside, thought up the plot for what became my second novel, Union Dues. And from that 250 pages, I kind of chainsawed out six or seven short stories, and a couple of those got published. So I got something out of it. And it was a good experience to write it. But I just don't get those ideas that often of knowing what it takes to write a novel. I'm going to jump into this thing, which could take a year or two.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, your book is a wonderful read. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks. Nice to talk to you.